Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Good evening. So, that's a funny thing, this practice of ours and of mine. You know, here I am about to give a talk about a practice whose essence, or the essence of which is for the most part unspeakable. Or maybe for the all part, unspeakable. Yet, we must say something, we must speak it. And so it's kind of funny. Maybe you found yourself in situations like that, trying to share with somebody what your practice is about, and feeling, well, yeah, I didn't quite say it. I didn't quite get there. I had one time, like my whole lunch, half an hour or so with a coworker who was interested, and I talked for the whole half an hour. I'm not sure if I ate, because I was trying to explain, because I was really excited and everything. But I had to talk for the whole half an hour because I'd say a few things and say, well, that's not it. And talk about it, well, that's not it. And despite all that, she really got something out of it. She really enjoyed it. There was something there. So it didn't need the words to be conveyed, I suppose. And I look often with curiosity into what I think is at the heart of our tradition, the Koan way. And this is something that came, that I, you know, that I saw or touched into a few years ago, and it's still there when I look. So it may change, but I've noticed it's been there for a while, just saying, yes, this is the essence of it. And it's transformation and freedom. And when I talk about the transformation, I don't mean going from this to that, because that's not freedom. That's not the other half, because it's to, you know, go from a this to a that, which becomes another this. But it's more of joining with the transformation that is what all of existence is. So it's being transformation itself, not transforming from one thing to another, yeah? But I'm not talking about that tonight. I'm going to talk about the other part, which I always say, freedom, the less said about it, the better. Because the more you say about it, the more ideas you have about what it is, the more images, wondering what it would feel like, all that kind of stuff, the more you assign to it, the less likely you are to encounter it, because you've created requirements that, for the most part, aren't what you're experiencing currently. So, yeah. The less said about it, the better, and here I am, I'm going to talk about it. Going against my own advice. But then I realize I'm not really talking about it. I'm talking next to it and around it and beneath it or whatever. We'll see. But freedom is really what I think this way is about. This is what it offers to us, each of us. Complete freedom. And in times that we're in currently, and really all times that we are in, this is so, but there's sometimes the fact of things comes to meet us more directly, the oppression in the world, the non-freedom for people, right? We're seeing a lot of that and hearing a lot about that. But we're always under oppression in some form, and a lot of times, individually, we are our own oppressor. We are denying ourselves our freedoms. We have conditions of ideas about how we should be or shouldn't be. We've inherited them from society or come up with the ideas ourselves. So we're imprisoning ourselves. We are, again, our own oppressors. But lately, looking at the landscape and the headline-scape and the actual happening scape of our world, and thinking about the freedom that I see at the core of this tradition. I wonder, you know, is it really useful for times like these? Because sometimes it seems really impractical, that larger freedom. You know, when I'm looking at what's needed in the world. And also I look at how can we help, as bodhisattvas, help everybody find their freedom. And at times like these, but also all times, you can really see how people are imprisoned by themselves and by institutions and ideas. So a few weeks ago, I think I was like, I don't know if this is really a practical practice for times like these. But the more time I spent with it, it's like, well, fortunately, it doesn't have to be practical. And yes, it is completely worthwhile and really essential for times like these, but also for all times. And I had one person in particular, but over the years, people ask that question about, well, what's this freedom thing, right? And recently there was somebody asking, well, that freedom, is it about, you know, the things I'm trapped in, or can address those issues and all this kind of stuff that we're seeing around, of the oppression and the imprisonment? And I was like, well, no, it's not about that. And I felt bad, because it doesn't seem very encouraging to say, no, that's not what it's about. And I couldn't at that time really get my head around, well, what is it about for me? What is it that I see that makes me be able to say clearly, no, that's not what it's about? So it was really because of that person's question that I was able to figure out how to, maybe, we'll find out, express something about it or next to it. Because many people, maybe all of us in this room, certainly all of us in this room to varying degrees, had conditions or have conditions in our lives that brought us to this practice because we wanted to address them, right? We wanted to, maybe it's just taking up meditation. You didn't mean to come to practice Zen or koan. I wanted to go to meditation so I could not be as stressed, so I could have some space around my life, just so I could deal with my circumstances. Yeah? Or maybe looking in the world and seeing the work that needs to be done, you connected with meditation and realized it really helps to give you energy and nourish you to be able to do that work. And even though I say the freedom that this practice offers isn't about addressing those things really at all, it doesn't mean you won't find freedom in this practice that does address those things. And that's a common thing. We sit, we meditate, we find we're less reactive, more responsive. We're able to manage and deal with our lives better. We might feel more contentment and peace than we had before. In, you know, ups and downs, but maybe increasingly so over time. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's helpful. Again, helps us work with the life we have inside and around us. But that's conditional freedom. Because it was a freedom born of conditions that were being addressed. And even if that particular type of freedom within us gets large, it's still going to be connected to a condition. So it's not that essential freedom that I think of with this practice. But again, don't poo-poo it. Don't get rid of it. It's all right. You know, enjoy it. That's part of this practice. It's even, you know, I saw some headline, I didn't read the article, but it was from some Buddhist teacher who said, you know, the heart of our nation needs a transplant of loving kindness and peace, or something like that. Basically saying we need to bring this practice to our nation's heart. And I'm thinking, yes, that would be good, but that would be conditional because it's addressing that. Not a bad thing, but I noticed, why just that? Why stop there? And that's, you know, turning it to myself or to us as individuals. When you experience that conditional freedom that is very helpful and beneficial, you find that contentment and peace. What I say is, why stop there? Don't be happy, or don't be satisfied with your own happiness. Don't be satisfied with contentment. Enjoy it. But don't work hard to maintain that and hold up a space around it. Go to the edges of it. See as far as it reaches. Go down beneath it to the bottom and break through and expand. Go beyond it. So don't limit yourself to your own happiness and your own conditional freedom. Doesn't mean you get rid of it. Allow it to be there in the field of your experience. But don't stop. What more might there be? And so that what more might there be for me is that essential freedom, which I'm calling unconditional freedom. At least that's an aspect of it. There's an unconditional aspect to that freedom. And this is where I see like three fallacies of thinking that come up when we try to bring the conditions of our lives to unconditional freedom and see how they work together, how they function. Imagine you might have come across in readings something that, though I can't quite describe it, maybe you touched into, oh yeah, that freedom, whoa, right? That's too much. I just want to manage my life, you know. Or, yeah, I'd love to know that, but I have these things. And there's stories that come up around that unconditional freedom as they relate to the conditions in our lives. So the fallacies, I see three major ones. One, and they're all on the same spectrum. They're not disconnected. They're all part of one another, just different degrees of it. But one is that, and this is, to me, the most harmful one, is if I experience unconditional freedom, then I'm freed from worrying about the practical conditions of my life. They don't affect me anymore. They don't matter because I'm living in unconditional freedom. A lot of people have caused harm because they've either been on that side and justified their actions, or maybe those around them also viewed that, well, they're acting from that place that is beyond the normal constraints of living. And so they excuse behaviors that were harmful and damaging to individuals. So that's a fallacy to think that the experience of unconditional freedom will free you from the conditions of your life and the responsibility of taking care of them. Yeah? And then perhaps on the other end of that spectrum is, in order to experience unconditional freedom, I have to first address all the conditions of my life, all the things that are oppressing and confining me. I have to get rid of those first before I can experience that other freedom. Well, that's not true. That's a condition. Right? And then related to that, maybe somewhere in the middle of the two of those is, if I have an experience of that things opening and that vast freedom that I can't talk about till afterwards, and then I'm measuring it with conditional things, so it's not quite it, but you kind of know, and I'm trusting, because we're all humans, we've had some kind of experience like that, large or small, but a sense of just things drop away. But then we see, oh, the conditions of my life are coming up again. They're not taken care of, and so we say to ourselves, that must have been it wasn't real. That's not true. Because there really is no relationship between the practical, everyday conditions of your life and that unconditional freedom. Because it's unconditional, it exists outside of time and space. And that's why you can't talk about it, except afterwards, and you're talking at the edge of it. You're not really expressing it, because it can't be expressed. But there's also a sense that timelessness of it can be that, oh, That stuff that I thought was a problem all my life, all of a sudden it's not a problem anymore. And it never was, actually. It's like that timelessness just wipes it all out. We have this this poem in our readings by Mary Oliver. It talks about, you know, the locks. I think it's deep in the tree, but you undo this one lock and all the locks crack open at once. So that timelessness of the unconditional freedom just wipes it all out. And there's this, this has always been aspect. Why was I looking for it? What was I searching for? It's been right here all the time. I like to say it's realizing, well, for myself, it was, the ancestors weren't deceiving me after all. They weren't lying when they said, right here, in this very place, your experience right now is it. Like, I believed him at first enough to get me interested in the practice, but I was like, yeah, there's a trick here. But there's a moment of going, oh, they weren't deceiving me. Yeah. And so when that happens, again, it's not connected to those conditions. Yet it can then, having the experience, can fuel the practices that we do. And the conditional freedom that we experience through the individual practices that are addressing a certain thing can be enhanced and enlarged and become more effective. But the unconditional freedom doesn't really care. It's not going in there so you can manage your life and so you can be more effective with this and that. It's just saying, let's see what happens. If it says that at all, maybe it's just like, nonchalantly existing alongside there. So here's the
sorry, I didn't get that.
Don't worry, Siri, I didn't either. Siri.
I don't do that.
Siri, if you could have gotten that, it wouldn't be unconditional freedom. Silly girl. I might say a delightful source of frustration. Maybe that's from my perspective, but you've heard it before, is because that freedom is unconditional, there is no map to it. There's no recipe. There's nothing you can specifically do to reach it. So the old REM song, you can't get there from here. It's true. Because if there's a here and a there, it's not unconditional. Yeah. So then what's a person to do? Follow your practice. Develop a practice. Experiment with your practice. Trust that practice. Because what's happening is, on one hand, we have the conditions of our lives that have been rolling on for however long they have. And then on the other hand, we begin a practice like this, we develop a practice, we create different conditions, right? We might think, I'm getting rid of the old and replacing them with these. That may be true. Or we're going to have the two conditioned camps butting heads against each other and, you know, getting heated with each other, getting worn out with each other, or just getting so wrapped up with one another that in a moment they forget what they're doing and we drop through beyond them. So we have conditions, we create conditions so that they can wear one another out, occupy one another, and then there's something else that can happen, the third thing maybe, but it's not really a third thing, it's beyond thing. But then you can't figure, that's what I did, now I know what I did, so I can get back there. It doesn't work that way. You just keep following your practice, trusting your practice, letting it bump up against what it bumps up against. There's the story about the stump watchers. And this is the example of, if you have dropped into that place of unconditional freedom and you try to recreate the conditions, you're a stump watcher. And what that refers to is this guy was sitting in meditation in the forest. There was tall trees and stumps around. And as he was sitting there, this rabbit ran out of the woods and went smack headfirst into a stump. Poof, knocked itself out. And when that happened, something dropped through and he had that unconditional freedom experience. And he was certain it was because the rabbit ran into the stump. So then he dedicated his time to watching that stump, waiting for the next rabbit. It would have been better to move on somewhere else, yeah? So there's no path there, there's no recipe. But you have a practice that creates conditions, and you have a life that has inherent conditions within it. Let the two mix and mingle. And again, trust your practice, follow your practice, but most of all, experiment with it. Go for it intently at times. See what happens. Take it easy at other times, as long as you're following your practice and doing what it's asking of you and not making a rule out of it. Yeah. But keep experimenting and noticing what happens. Not so you can figure out the recipe, but just so you can help it wear out the territory of things. Yeah. And those glimpses or long gazes of unconditional freedom, you at it, it at you, or neither. Yeah. They will find you. You will... Yes. Trust that. And the other thing you can trust is that the conditional freedoms and the condition of your life and the unconditional freedom, they need one another. If we lean too far into the conditional side of things, we get bound up, we get stuck in patterns, we might be in a very lovely territory, but we're limited to it. If we try to go for unconditional freedom, that's a place where nothing happens. Nothing at all. It's not very useful to try to live in that place. But the nature of our practice invites the experience of both to mix and mingle with one another. We talk about with retreats, meditation retreats you go on, you can kind of abide in more of that unconditional, flowing, spacious place for days on end, yeah. But it's important that you come back to the world and let it bump into the particulars again. And there's a process of integration that happens there. Working the ephemeral and the spacious into the soil of our lives, bringing it down to earth, getting it woven in, yeah? But I've been thinking of it since I've been considering this topic. Rather than just being an integration process, because that feels one-sided to me, we're integrating the vast into the particular, I'm seeing it as a mutual translation project that's between the two types of freedom and nothing to do with me. Just because I allow the field of my experience to embody them as they are, as they come and go, they talk to one another. They learn the language of one another, which is kind of funny because unconditional freedom has no language. And then conditional freedom has lots of language. So it's more... unconditional freedom goes into conditional freedom and conditioned existence and undoes the tightness and the constrictions of language and ideas and opens up space. While simultaneously, conditional existence and conditional freedom gives embodiment to that which is not embodied yet. Gives it a word that can get close to it and give it a place to land and a place in which it can abide with not catching it and holding on to it, but just, here, you can rest here. I can give these words and it can hold you, unconditional freedom. How great, yeah? So in concert, they're working together. And I see, you know, that translation project, there's another side of it is they lose their own identities in the process. So, Conditional freedom forgets that it's conditional. And unconditional freedom forgets that it's unconditional. They can't tell which is which anymore because they're sharing a language, creating a language. And then we're just left with complete freedom. Maybe that's the thing, the less said about the better. Complete freedom. It's made up of all of this, not confined or limited to any of it, not possible without any of it. I want to come around the bend with a few phrases and stories that came to mind as examples of different stages of the translation project, of the space between conditional and unconditional. Yeah. kind of going from when the conversations and the translations are initially happening and moving into a place where they feel more complete and have lost their individual identities. So the first is this story where somebody has died and the teacher comes to the funeral and is wailing and wailing, and at least one student, probably more, but one student noticed and went up to the teacher and says, "You know, teacher, you're enlightened, you're awakened, and I saw you weeping and moaning so much over this funeral. How is that so? Aren't you beyond all of this?" And the teacher says, "Well, yes, but when else do I have such an occasion that I can cry and grieve like this?" There's one side, I'm trying to give a little bit of credit to the story, because it's got a Zen stink to it, yeah? I should go, pew. No. It stinks so much I can taste it. but the non-stinky part is that, oh, fortunately I get to cry and grieve, yeah? But I don't hear that in the story. What I hear more is that the teacher kind of buys into this idea that, oh, you're beyond all that, but he's just taking advantage of an opportunity to cry. So it's like, yeah, your translation project has some more work to do, perhaps. But there is something noticeable there. So, you know, go back and forth between those or see what else might happen. But, yeah, a little stinky. So then we have this other story where someone who's been likely engaged in practice for a while has gone away, and either on pilgrimage or into solitary practice. And had some kind of experience that feels whole and complete, and so comes back to the monastery and sees the teacher he had been working with for a long time, you know, standing out working in the garden or something like that. And the student has this lightness to his step and this shine. He goes to the teacher and says, "Teacher, I've come with nothing." And the teacher says, "Okay, put it down." He says, "But I haven't got anything. How can I put it down?" "Well, in that case, keep carrying it." So yeah, something's happening there, but more translation to go on, right? This same teacher, Zhao Zhou, was a teacher in that story, I believe. Anyway, he's in this story where in the koans we have several different times that Zhao Zhou brings in what must have been one of his favorite teaching tools, the words from Sing Tsang, in the third ancestor, about the great way is not difficult, it just avoids picking and choosing. So he brings it up again and again and comments on it. Well, one time, a student went to him after lunch and said, "You know, teacher, you know, Zhao Zhou, you always teach from the great way is not difficult. It just avoids picking and choosing. But I've been watching you at lunch every day. I notice you never eat the carrots, but you always eat the cucumbers. Isn't that picking and choosing? Why don't you eat them both?" He goes, "Oh, Because I hate carrots and I love cucumbers. So, another story. There's a few of these, but they're kind of fun to hang out with, and hopefully you can feel this, you know, the translation going deeper between them. This is from Mara Sosin O'Halloran, an Irish-American who went to Japan, studied in the temples there. Pure Heart, Enlightened Mind, a great book. Her journals I recommend to read. But this is a poem she wrote one time, one of my favorites. She said, "I was not born, and I will not die, for I am nothing. But please don't step on my toes." Yeah. Then another step into that, not onto the toes, but another step is from our collection, A Double Rapture by Anna Swear, which says, "Because there is no me, and because I feel how much there is no me." Two more to go. This one jumps back towards the beginnings of our tradition. It's with Vimalakirti. Some of you have read the current book that's out, or gone listen to the talks by Joan Sutherland, or maybe you're familiar with Vimalakirti in other ways as well. But he's at home and he's sick. And somebody asks him, "Why are you sick?" And he replies, "I am sick because the whole world is sick." Yeah. Likewise, the whole world is sick because I am sick. And this isn't judgment on the world. He's not saying the world is sick and I have to be a part of it. He's just saying, at this time, my conditions are that I'm sick, and I'm sick because the whole world is sick. I imagine any question, somebody says, "Why are you joyful?" "I am joyful because the world is joyful." "Why are you confused?" "I am confused because the world is confused." We can always have that exact same reply. And we can say them all at once. It's not like it's just sickness or just joy. They're all commingled. So he's in that place of, well, this is how things are. How could I be anything other than what things are? Yeah. And then this last one, which also has something to do with sickness, by happenstance. It's when the teacher Dongshan was ill. And someone came to him and said, "Teacher, I see that you are ill, and you've been ill for a while, but I wonder, is there someone who isn't ill?" Kind of saying, you know, here you are with these conditions of your life, but is there a part of you that lives beyond this illness, that isn't affected by these conditions? Dongshan says, "Yes, there is." The person asks, "Is that other caring for you while you're ill?" Dongshan replies, "I am properly caring for that other. I, the one who am sick, am caring for the one who is not sick." It's like, what? Makes that two-way street come alive, yeah? The interpermeability of the mutuality. So the person says, "What is it like when you're caring for that other?" And Dongshan said, "When I do that, I do not recognize any sickness." So to me, that gets as close to the bone of that that complete freedom. So the last thing I will not say about it, or say about it and miss the mark, is something that I think the quality of that complete freedom is to be fully immersed in the world, in our lives, fully and completely in the conditions. addressing things, working what we need to in ourselves, working on social issues, whatever we need to, fully immersed in things, yet not entangled by them. They don't wrap us up, they don't confine us. And probably because we're not trying to get away from them. If we try to pull away, they wrap us up to say, come back, we need you. So complete freedom, I say, is to be, again, fully immersed in the world, but not entangled by it. So, thank you.